You could be anywhere doing anything, but you're hanging out with us. And we appreciate that. So wherever you're listening and however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another exciting episode of the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in tacos, S as in sangria, M as in margaritas. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can they find you on Twitter, my man?
Find me on Twitter at Coach Ken underscore TNBA. Again, Coach Ken underscore T as in Tampa Bay, N as in New Orleans, B as in Baltimore, A as in Atlanta.
All right. Kennedy Miller, we've had an interesting 3 or 4 months, and it's, you know, kind of made me think about something. Remember how when we were kids, Kennedy Miller, we used to play on the playground?
Yes.
And, you know, we used to play all those games, you know, Cops and Robbers.
Right.
Marines and, you know, all those little, like, those little kid games. Play Fort and stuff in the house. And act like you're on a submarine, right, and things like that. And it's just total escapism. You know what I mean?
Right.
I feel like that is what we are doing at this point with acting like as if there's going to be a football season this year, right? Like, sometimes, like, we know good and damn well this is make-believe. We know good and well this is not real. We know good and well this is not about to happen, but it is fun to pretend. And Cam Newton signing with the Patriots makes it really fun to pretend there's going to be a season. Because, man, if there was ever something as intriguing as Cam Newton and Bill Belichick together, I don't know if I've heard it yet. Kennedy Miller, what were just your initial thoughts once hearing that Cam Newton is heading to Foxborough?
I loved it. You know, Cam is a guy that I thought should have been one of the first quarterbacks to be called when free agency started. I looked at teams like the Bears, like the Chargers, teams who I thought had rosters that could compete for playoff spots that I thought Cam would be a good fit in. And those teams instead chose Tyrod Taylor and Nick Foles. And so you look at a team like the Jaguars, who I feel still need a quarterback, who just seem to be in a direction of going with Gardner Minshew for this year, and I guess maybe tanking for Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields. And it was kind of confusing trying to figure out what the Patriots were doing, because it's like, does Bill Belichick know more than we know? Because obviously he knows more football than we do, but what did he know about Jarrett Stidham that looked like he was going to be the starting quarterback before this week happened? And so, you know, everybody's like, you can go back through a lot of people's Twitter feeds or old sports shows where they're like, oh, Cam's not going to the Patriots. Oh, Bill doesn't want him. He's not good enough. And then you look at the Andy Dalton thing, him passing up on Andy Dalton, letting the Cowboys sign him as a backup. And you're like, oh, well, he must really be sold on Jarrett Stidham. And so for him to pick up Cam Newton, you know, I think it is great for both sides, because with the contract that he signed, it's all pretty much incentive based. So they're not really losing much money. And then for Cam, it's, you know, he's been posting these videos almost 2 or 3 times a week working out. Show us that you're fully healthy, because we know that when Cam is fully healthy, he is a top 10 quarterback. He's a fringe MVP candidate year in and year out. And you put him with Bill Belichick, now they don't have a lot of weapons. So it's not, you know, necessarily a match made in heaven, but they do have an elite defense. They are playing in a division that isn't totally stacked. The Buffalo Bills have a better roster, I believe, but would I be surprised if New England won that division for the umpteenth time? Because I fully believe that Cam is head and shoulders the best quarterback in that division right now, easily. And so would I be surprised if New England were to win the division? No. So I think that it's a win for both sides. And I think it just makes another team more entertaining. You know that when New England lost Tom Brady, you're like, oh, well, the Patriots, you know, what are they really going to bring to the table? They're going to be kind of boring to watch this year. They don't really have that many skill players. We don't really know who Jarrett Stidham is, but you would assume that he would be somewhat of a game manager this year. So I wasn't really excited to watch the Patriots this year. But with Cam Newton, I'm definitely going to tune into games now.
So I've got a few things that kind of popped up in my head once they announced that Cam was going to go to Foxborough. Number one, like on the field wise, right? Mm-hmm. If like injury wise, if Cam has a clean bill of health, Cam should be able to take this team to 7-8 wins, maybe 9, because they've still got a really, really good defense out there. And that was really what was carrying the Patriots last season, because as we all knew, no Gronkowski, no receivers that could really get open. Like, that defense was head and shoulders above everyone else, you know, until they lost that last game of the regular season against Miami. Derrick Henry and the red-hot Titans came in there and took him out in the first round. But other than that, we were talking about, for the longest, the Patriots possibly winning the Super Bowl again. And I think one thing Belichick will do, he's going to move things around to make Cam as comfortable as possible. I mean, schematically, right? And so we always saw them do that with Tom Brady, which as the years went by and as, you know, the talent increased to decrease or as it changed, they always adapted to what they were doing. So in 2006, 2007, and 2008, when they had Moss and they were throwing a ball all over the place and Brady threw 50 touchdowns and they almost won Super Bowl and went undefeated, they threw the ball all over the place. When Brady got hurt the next year and missed basically the entire season, they tailored it around Matt Castle and won 11 ball games. So my thought is this. If they can tailor things around Matt Castle, and none of us think Matt Castle is any good, right? If they can tailor things around Matt Castle for a season and win 11 ball games, I think they can figure out something to do with Cam Newton for a year. I figure they can figure out something to make Cam Newton look halfway decent. Well, not even halfway decent, but you understand what I mean. Like, if Cam's healthy, this can go really, really well. However, like, I did think about this. So, we're all familiar with the idea that Cam Newton has carried two teams to the peak of the sport, right? The 2010 Auburn Tigers, and he almost got the Carolina Panthers there in 2015, right?
Right.
So, my thought is, Cam was able to carry those two teams at his peak physically. Like, do you know who any of those guys who played on that Auburn team were? Can you name any of them off the top of your head?
Besides Nick Fairley, no.
His receivers were Darvin Adams, D'Angelo Benton, Terrell Zachary, Emory Blake, Cody Burns, anybody?
Yeah, no.
The 2015 Carolina Panthers. Do you know who his receivers were?
Devin Funchess.
That was one.
Ted Ginn
was the number one receiver, yep.
Then I just know Greg Olsen.
Greg Olsen, and their third receiver was Jericho Cotchery.
Yeah, Jericho Cotchery. Wow. Because Kelvin Benjamin missed the year.
Yeah, Kelvin Benjamin was out for the year.
Yep.
And this roster that they've got with the New England Patriots, their skill players don't look terribly dissimilar from that. N'Keal Harry, Jacoby Myers. Mm-hmm. Muhammad Sanu's a number two guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Julian Edelman.
They've got Edelman there still. And Quincy Adebayo. And so my thing is, you've got Edelman and Sanu, who we've all heard of. And N'Keal Harry didn't really pan out during his rookie year. Like, the Patriots got problems at receiver. Like, this may be the most talented receiving core Cam Newton's ever played with, but they really aren't, like, that good. Like, if we remember last year, the Patriots went out there and signed Antonio Brown until they had to cut him, you know, just because of everything that was going on. They tried it with Josh Gordon, even though Josh Gordon, bless his heart, he's an addict and can't seem to get himself together. Right? Like, no Gronkowski. Tight end-wise, it doesn't feel like they're going to have much over there. Like, running back-wise, they've got James White and Sonny Michel. Like, this isn't the most talented offensive team. The offensive line isn't really good either. So, while we could have expected the 2010 Cam Newton or 2015 Cam Newton to put a team on his back a la Allen Iverson did in 2001 when he carried that bad team to the finals against Kobe and Shaq. Remember that?
Yes.
Can this 30-year-old version of Cam Newton do that? Is that a fair question to ask?
No, it's fair. I think a couple of things are working for him. One, the offensive line has always been, I'm not going to say spectacular, but they've always managed to keep Tom Brady standing up, if that makes sense. Their offensive line coach did just retire, who he retired a couple of years ago, actually. and Tom Brady started taking some hits and they kind of, you know, begged him to come out of retirement. But I think that considering the hits that Cam has taken in Carolina, it would be an upgrade from what he had in Carolina. Now, some of those hits were warranted on his own, not sliding, getting outside the pocket, so on and so forth. But I also think it's a benefit that he's playing in the AFC. I think you look at teams like Kansas City and Baltimore, and their head and shoulders are above the pack. But after that, I think the AFC is wide open as far as who is that third, who's the fourth best team in the AFC. Then you couple that with there's an extra game, there's an extra playoff spot on both sides. And I think this team really could compete with, when you're looking at their division and that, you know, the AFC East with, you know, they got a young Tua and Ryan Fitzpatrick in Miami, and they've got Josh Allen and Sam Darnold in Buffalo and with the Jets. And you look at young quarterback's record against Bill Belichick, I think only one quarterback 23 years or younger has won. I'm not sure who that quarterback is off the top of my head. But young quarterbacks struggle, especially playing in New England. And so I think getting a quarterback like Cam Newton, you talked about some of the running backs, James White and Sonny Michel. I think when you saw Cam at his best, he had two running backs with Jonathan Stewart and Fozzie Whitaker, and then at the tail end with Christian McCaffrey. So I think that's what you'll see, a strong defense and a really strong running game with those two running backs with Cam Newton.
I think what's going to be really important that New England does is that they're going to have to scheme up some things, right? And that's one thing Josh McDaniels, who is still the offensive coordinator in New England, he's really good at scheming up stuff, right? So you remember how in the mid-2000s, the San Antonio Spurs, things kind of went away from Tim Duncan on the block and went more towards the perimeter with Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili and more of the pick and roll?
Mm-hmm.
McDaniels kind of evolved like that as Brady aged as well. So I think, you know, as you age, things become more important than just raw physical ability and physical skill. Like, it doesn't become as much of, am I faster than you or am I stronger than you? Things are much more about, you know, formations, alignment, matchups, right? And with Cam in Carolina, they never did anything to scheme things up for Cam to make it easy, to get him easy throws. It was more like, hey, Cam, go get the first down for us. Hey, Cam, make a play. Hey, Cam, we need you to score right here. Like, nothing ever came easy. In the same way to where, like, James Harden, though he's supremely talented, gets no easy baskets. Like, he works so hard for his points. Cam Newton, in a lot of ways, is in the same place. You know, and as you get older and as your athleticism wanes, you can't rely just on just being you isn't going to be enough. So they're going to have to scheme some things up for Cam to get him in good places. But, and I tell you what, I surely hope he's healthy. And I surely hope he's not finished. Because if Cam's injured and things like that, I don't want to see Cam out there. Like, if it's because last year he was hiding that foot injury from the Panthers. And then, you know, the season starts and Cam's looking shot. And it's like, yo, what's wrong?
Yep.
And I got to ask you a question, Cam.
Yes, sir.
How many times have you seen a former league MVP, a guy who dragged his team to the Super Bowl, waiting this long on the unemployment line?
It's been a long time, man. I don't think I've ever seen it. Especially when, like I said, the guys that they chose in free agency when Cam was available, and it's also a discredit to the Panthers because they waited a long time to officially release him. But at the same time, I think he could immediately help a team like the Chargers. He could immediately help a team like the Bears. And they just decided not to go with him. And it said, it was a report that said New England was one of the only teams, or the only team rather, besides, I want to say, the Browns, to look at Cam Newton or to think about signing him. I think a guy like Chase Daniel makes more than Cam Newton or Jameis Winston is making as a backup. And I want to say he's thrown maybe 3 passes in 3 years. So I just, you know, I don't think those decisions were strictly because of his on-field performance. You can say injuries, whatever, but I think there was a personal vendetta from the league against Cam Newton, whether they didn't like the way he played or how he celebrated. I don't know. I don't know what it was, but I don't think it was just football why Cam wasn't signed.
I totally understand where you're coming from, but we got to leave it right there. We will be right back with more of the Game Plan Podcast. And coming up next, we're going to look back on the decision. LeBron, the big three. We're going to do a little bit of a look back on the other side of the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Game Plan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at AlexGoodwinTSM. Again, that's on Twitter at AlexGoodwinTSM. Follow the show on Twitter, Game Plan TSM. That's T as in Ted, S as in Sam, M as in mother. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Coach Ken underscore TNBA. Again, Coach Ken underscore T as in Toronto, N as in New York, B as in Boston, A as in, I said Atlanta last time, but I'm just going to roll with it again. Atlanta.
All right. All right. Switching gears to the NBA, you know, normally around July 1st, NBA free agency would have began, you know, the free agency bonanza, you know, that ensues year in, year out. And, you know, this July, we've come up on a particular anniversary. And this is the anniversary of LeBron James and Chris Bosh joining Dwayne Wade in Miami to form the Big Three. So I kind of just wanted to talk to you, Kennedy Miller, about this, you know, as you're the biggest LeBron James fan that I know. So first off, my first question for you would be, how do you think this just reshaped the league as a whole in the last 10 years?
This was the first time that a player really took control of his destination throughout free agency, as far as telling management, telling ownership that if you haven't provided suitable resources for me to be successful, then I'm going to take the opportunity. I'm going to leave in the prime of my career and go somewhere else. Too many times LeBron realized that he didn't want to be that guy that was known as a Hall of Fame caliber player, but could not get the job done because he just kept playing against better competition. His management wasn't providing a suitable number two, or a second or third best player on those Cavalier rosters to give him enough help. And you look at those first couple of years, and there was the Jonas Ilgauskas, and there was a past his prime Shaq, and a past his prime Ben Wallace, and Mo Williams, who was supposed to be disguised as an all-star and the second best player to help them win a championship. And they won 66 games, so they should have been the favorite. Well, you didn't address a second score. I would say that they needed most another wing to help him, which I think is why he ended up going to Miami. But he needed somebody to take the load off. And Mo was that guy during the regular season. But I think LeBron quickly realized that if you're asking me to beat Orlando Magic team with a 7-foot monster surrounded by shooters, and not just shooters, but guys like Rashard Lewis and Hedo Turkoglu, who are 6'8", 6'9", shooters, it's a tough ask. And you're asking me to beat a big three Celtics team who isn't trying to give up their throne, you know, at the top of the East. So, yeah, if you're not willing to spend money, and I read this in a book a long time ago, I think after they won, the Cavs won the championship in 2016, a big part of his free agency in 2010, what he was telling teams, one of the stipulations for me to come here, you have to be able to spend money. Like past the cap hole, you have to be going into the luxury tax. You have to be willing to do that. And Miami was one of those teams that was willing to do it. And so that's initially why he came. And that's also why he ended up leaving, because they stopped wanting to go past that luxury tax and spend extra money.
I think like one of the biggest issues you said of LeBron not being able to get help in Cleveland in those early years. I mean, the big issue with that is, some of that ain't got nothing to do with the luxury tax. That's like, who want to live in Cleveland? Like,
true.
I'm sorry, Kennedy Miller. If you give me a choice of where I would like to be and be young and rich and in my 20s and single, Cleveland's really, really low on the list. Hey, like if LeBron was playing for the Atlanta Hawks or something, I'm pretty sure they could have made a whole lot more shake.
I agree.
Like, because, you know, there were, you know, rumors around 09, 2010 that, you know, that a pretty significant, nobody's ever said who, front court player, there was a trade in place for them to trade him to the Cavaliers, but he was like, yo, I don't want to go to Cleveland. I won't sign the contract. I'm not, no. Right?
Yep.
And there's thought from some people that guy was Amari Stoudemire.
Yep, that's what I was about to say.
And, like, you know, if we're talking about if they're in, you know, Houston, you don't have that problem. They're in Dallas, they don't have that problem. I think the second thing with LeBron that I think has happened is in 2010, everybody behaved as if the sky was falling, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, how this is going to mess with the competitive balance in the NBA and this, that, and the third. I mean, if we don't, I think a lot of people forget that they had to build that Miami Heat team from the ground up. When LeBron and Chris Bosh signed in Miami, at first, those were the only three guys on the team. And they built that team around those three guys. And, like, the starting point guard, I want to say that year was Carlos Arroyo and Mike Bibby.
Yep.
In 2010. And, you know, they really built it up around them, and they figured it out from there. But even since then, now, the norm is having two stars. Like, that's become the baseline to even compete. So now, in my opinion, there aren't even really super teams. Like, the baseline to compete for a championship is you need two high-level players, right? Like, Kawhi Leonard, what he did last year in Toronto, notwithstanding. And that's, you know, part of the reason they won is because the Warriors just fell terrible victim to the injury bug. But all the other contenders, we're talking like, the 76ers have Simmons and Embiid, right? The Warriors had Durant, Curry, Thompson, and the whole crew, right? LeBron James now has Anthony Davis, right? The Rockets have Harden and Westbrook. Like, you got to have two, three guys. Like, Portland has Lillard and McCollum. And at this point, the league has gotten to a place where there's so much talent and there's so much talent out there. So now one player just won't do it. Like, Anthony Davis, as great as he is, made it out of the first round one time in New Orleans. Like, 25 years ago, just having Anthony Davis on your team would have taken you two rounds deep, easily. You know, does that make any sense?
No, I absolutely agree, and that's why I argue not, like, that's why I argue with Jordan fans that, you know, you can talk about how soft this era is and all this stuff, but you can't deny the talent and the skill level and how good the teams are, because every team that, you know, LeBron has played, if you look back at it, if you look at every team that he's played in the finals, it's three Hall of Famers. You look at the Spurs, Parker, Ginobili, Duncan, the first time Hall of Famers. Then they add Kawhi Leonard in 2014, Hall of Famer. He beats Oklahoma City in 2012, three Hall of Famers. He beats Golden State, three Hall of Famers. They add Kevin Durant, four Hall of Famers. And then you can make a case for Andre Iguodala as well.
Hold on. Wait. I didn't mean to cut you off. Iguodala as a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, I think he can make a case.
In like a Robert Horry kind of way?
In a Robert Horry. I think I went on this podcast after game two last year, and I said Iguodala is a Robert Horry of that Warriors team.
Hmm.
Because, you know, not the best shooter, little past his prime, but if you needed somebody to make a play in a big moment, it was Andre Iguodala. And you were like, he was wide open on a shot that won in the game. And I was like, you know, any other time, at any other point in the game, you're like, oh, Iguodala shooting it, not Steph, not Clay, not Kevin Durant, Iguodala shooting it, oh, I'm okay with that. But it's something about when the game was on the line, I got antsy, and I was like, I don't know if he should be open. And lo and behold, he knocked it down. And so when you think about the talent level, like you just brought it up, all these teams with multiple all-stars. And I think what LeBron has done has influenced players to want to just move around. You know, it's not a lot of guys like Damian Lillard that are completely loyal to a franchise, because I think they understand now that when I mess up my knee or when I'm not the same, what will they do to me?
you know, will I still be that savior that the whole city loves, that the organization will do anything for, if I'm not putting up 25, 30 a game? That's a big reason why Paul George left Indiana, because he saw how they did Danny Granger after Danny Granger fell from being their best player, how they just shipped him out. And he was like, you know, it's no loyalty here. And so he was like, you know, that was a part of me wanting to leave Indiana. And I think now you look at, and now you're getting guys that people are already trying to speculate if they'll leave. Like, I remember last year, like, it was a rumor, like, Devin Booker, Karl Anthony Towns, and D'Angelo Russell want to team up one day, kind of trying to figure out how to do it. You know what I mean? And I think LeBron has been a big part of that.
I think, like, one of the other things that he's also done a really good job of is, like, players be like, yo, I ain't coming. Like, teams, you could argue that teams being held hostage by one of their players in a certain kind of way and trying to, in dictating the terms of certain situations. So let's think about Anthony Davis last year. Anthony Davis came out and said, yo, I ain't coming back. Trade me. I do not want to be in Boston. Sending me to Boston won't work. I'm going to tell them I'm not re-signing an extension. I don't care. Right? Or somebody like Kawhi Leonard, who basically held my Spurs hostage for about a year. And, you know, Kawhi wasn't really able to dictate the terms of a trade necessarily. Because I do think, you know, in one hand, San Antonio was like, all right, we're going to get back a second-tier guy in DeMar DeRozan, who's still an all-star, still a pretty good guy that's going to keep us afloat. And we're still going to win our 46, 47 ball games. But let's also send him to the coldest place we can possibly send him. Right?
Yep.
But, you know, there was a whole lot of Kawhi's like, yo, I'm not playing. I want my doctor. I want my this. I want my that. Nope, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to come. You know, it became a whole lot of, I can dictate to you because of who I am. And now there is, you see a whole lot more of that with guys now. Or Jimmy Butler, right?
Mm-hmm.
Showing up in Minnesota, cussing his teammates out, cussing the GM out, cussing the coach out. They be like, yo, I don't want to be here no more. I told y'all I don't want to be here no more. I mean, I'll play till. He was like, yo, I'll play till y'all trade me, but I want everybody to know I do not want to be here.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So there's much more just vocal players and much more, you could say, player empowerment. That's what everybody's been calling it for the last couple of years. And I think LeBron's really been at the forefront of that. And I think, yo, the owners hate it. The owners hate it. And I think that's why. And they've went to grave circumstances to try to prevent player movement and things of the sort. Like, that's where the Supermax contract comes about, right? That's where the stiff luxury tax penalties come about. You know, so the big market teams can't hoard guys. And do you remember who the first team to fall victim to the luxury tax was? Like, that extra expensive luxury tax?
Was it Oklahoma City?
It was Oklahoma City that had Harden, Westbrook, and Durant and Ibaka. And they had to break them up because they couldn't afford to pay all four of them.
Yeah.
The entire NBA has changed, in my opinion, because of the decision in 2010. That make any sense to you?
No, I mean, it absolutely does. You look at the teams, it just seems like when you go back and you look, that 2010 Lakers team that won the championship, after that, you know, even the Mavs are different. But, I mean, after that, it just seemed like the NBA shifted into a new era. And I mean, honestly, it did. It shifted into the big three era. And, you know, like you talked about, people were afraid that it wasn't enough competition, but it forced teams to have to get better. You know, that Spurs team, you know, they picked up Boris Diaw, and people thought that he was lost. And he played a pivotal role in both of the finals appearances that they went to. That Oklahoma City team, you know, trading Jeff Green for Kendrick Perkins really solidified them. And then signing Derek Fisher really solidified them as being a championship contender. And I'm of the reason that, you know, obviously they didn't have a lot of money to re-sign James Harden, but the numbers show that they were $5 or $6 million off. Although money was a factor in them trading him, I think also they looked at his performance in the finals. And although he was young, I don't think they thought he was as committed as the other ones. And so they tried to trade him because they didn't feel like he was worthy of that contract. Because I think the most that he could have gotten was like a 4-year, $68 million extension. And the most that they could have given him was like 4-year, 62. And so when you look back on it, most people are like, well, why didn't you just let go of Kendrick Perkins? I mean, he probably shouldn't even been playing in the finals, and they probably would have stood a better chance at beating Miami. But, you know, James goes to the Rockets, and then, you know, you look at the rise of the Warriors, and that was more like homegrown as far as drafting, and they drafted Harrison Barnes and Draymond Green in that same draft. And then they trade Monte Ellis for Andrew Bogut, and all of a sudden they're somehow a super team. And then they get Kevin Durant. And so you just look at how many moves have been made in the 2010s. I've actually loved the 2010s and all the moves that have been made, because change in the NBA excites me. I used to, you know, look at free agent, who's going to be a free agent this year? Can they go this, you know, can they go this place? I thought Paul George was going to go to the Lakers for a long time until I found out he was playoff piss. But that's
not a real person. That's not a real person.
I didn't have to throw that out there.
You sound bitter, Kennedy. You sound like Helen from Diary of a Mad Black Woman. Feed him. Clothe him, they say.
But, you know, it's just been amazing how 10 years later, you look at how the NBA is. LeBron and Anthony Davis are on the Lakers. Kawhi and Paul George are on the Clippers. Chris Paul's in Oklahoma City. Nobody from Oklahoma City that started there is there anymore. Russell Westbrook and James Harden on the same team somewhere else. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving on the same team somewhere else. You know, like, if we were to say these things 10 years ago, we would be like, there's no way that all this happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We got to leave it right there. But we will be right back with more of the Game Plan Podcast on the other side of the break. Don't go too far. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, it's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Follow the show on Twitter, Game Plan TSM. That's T as in Tony, S as in Saquon, M as in Michael, like Michael Thomas, the receiver from the Saints. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can they find you on Twitter, my man?
Find me on Twitter at CoachKen_TNBA. Again, CoachKen_T as in Tiny. N as in Nate. B as in Bob. A as in Archibald.
All right. We're going to keep things on the NBA. So I saw an interesting article on Bleacher Report, Kennedy Miller.
Okay.
Entitled Realistic Offseason Trades NBA Fan Bases Would Not See Coming.
Okay.
And I thought you, as our resident NBA expert, this would be the perfect time to get your opinion on such scenarios. You ready?
Gotcha.
All right. So to start things off, we have John Collins to the Golden State Warriors. So in this hypothetical trade, the Warriors would receive John Collins, Kevin Huerter, and the Atlanta Hawks would get back Kevon Looney, Jordan Poole, the Warriors' 2020 first-round pick, and a second-round pick from the Minnesota Timberwolves. So, Kenny Miller, what do you think?
I'm not sure if I like that. I don't know why the Hawks would do that. I like John Collins and Kevin Huerter for the Hawks. I think those are two, more so John Collins, but two centerpieces for their franchise for the future, and so I'm not understanding why they would do that trade.
The Hawks are still kind of trying to accumulate as many draft picks as possible.
Right.
And so that might be, I think, a part of it. And it appears as if according to Chris Kirshner of The Athletic, that the Hawks are kind of hesitant to pay significant money on an extension for John Collins. So
right.
If you can get back a 2020 first round pick, and, you know, keep your first round pick from this year and get the Warriors pick, which would be pretty damn high because they stunk up joint this year. You'd have two high, probably top 7-8 picks in the draft. You could work with that. And I think for a team like Golden State, after the D'Angelo Russell thing didn't work, they're looking for that new piece because they probably think they can contend for a title next year. Steph's going to be back. Klay's going to be back. Draymond's going to be back. They have to figure out something to do with Andrew Wiggins. But they think Steph, Clay, and Draymond, and, you know, you get a quality wing, and they can figure something out. So I can see how, you know, how Golden State would talk themselves into something such as this, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I can see it.
Moving on. Victor Oladipo to the Phoenix Suns. And so in this hypothetical trade, it will be Victor Oladipo going to Phoenix in exchange for Ricky Rubio, Mikal Bridges, and a 2020 first round pick, which would be top three protected.
That would be an intriguing backcourt. Oladipo and Booker with DeAndre Ayton. I don't think either of them would be, I don't think either of them would want to play the point guard position. So I'm kind of intrigued on who would be their point guard, and if it was, and who's going to come off the bench, because that's a really small wing tandem. Yeah, I mean, I think it would be interesting for Phoenix. I think they're right on the cusp of one of those guys in Booker and Ayton turning into a star, or them getting another piece, which makes them have a nice young trio. But Phoenix is an interesting team right now.
I think Phoenix has to do whatever they can to show Devin Booker, hey, we can be a competent franchise.
Yep.
Because there's only going to be, I think he's going to be a free agent in 2 years.
Yes, sir.
So, and they have not made the playoffs, not come close, and they have just been in the doldrums of the NBA's Western Conference. So I think a move like that would show them, hey, we are committed to actually being a good basketball team, especially as you mentioned earlier, the rumors of D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns and Devin Booker joining up somewhere has been floated out there enough to where, like, you know, that's a plausible thing Phoenix should have to worry about, right?
Right.
So I think that's not a bad idea. Now, mind you, Oladipo is going to be a free agent next summer, you know. But, of course, this was on the timeline pre-coronavirus and the world shutting down.
Right.
But I think, like, on the court-wise, Oladipo would make life a little bit easier for Devin Booker. He's a little bit more versatile defensively. And, you know, gives DeAndre Ayton a whole lot more space to operate in the paint. So, moving on, we've got Bradley Beal to the Miami Heat. In exchange for Andre Iguodala, Kelly Olynyk, Tyler Herro, and Duncan Robinson.
Well, obviously, that's really good for the Heat. Bradley Beal is somebody who I think could really fit in that system and really help them out as far as shot creating, shot making. Miami's a tough, they're a tough franchise. They pride themselves on working hard and being very disciplined. And I think Bradley and Jimmy with Bam would be very intriguing. Washington is in a weird place because, you know, John Wall, we haven't seen him play in about a year and a half, I believe. And according to John Wall, they haven't seen the best version of John Wall, but he's getting paid on the contract where it better be the best version of John Wall. And so they're in a weird place now where you know that they will be a playoff team and fully healthy with John Wall and Bradley Beal, but I'm not sure that window is still the same that it was, because it, for a minute, you know, they were a second round playoff team, interesting, fun to watch, but with injuries, age as well, I want to say John Wall is 30 now. I don't know what direction that franchise is going in with those two stars. So I think it is time to blow it up.
I would definitely agree with you there. And I think for a team like Miami, it is imperative to try to make their way up into the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference while they still can. And while Jimmy Butler is still relatively young, right? And so Jimmy Butler turns 31 in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley Beal is, you know, 27, 28 now, right? Got a lot of miles on him. And so that would be something, like, you know, just imperative, because outside of Toronto and I would say Milwaukee, you're right there. You know what I mean? Like, Philadelphia, for as much talent as Embiid and Simmons have, they can't seem to just be able to figure things out. Well, by figure things out, I mean Ben Simmons find himself a jump shot. And Brett Brown's not that good of a coach. You know, so Philadelphia is still underperforms. And so they would have a chance to get into that conversation of the elite teams in the Eastern Conference. And I think that would be the move. However, like Washington, it would kind of be puzzling if they were to trade him. Now, because they gave him a 2-year extension last summer, and they seem to not want to move him. And for some godforsaken reason, they really think him and John Wall can still do it. I love John Wall. I'm not sold that coming off an Achilles tear, he's going to be the same guy. I'm just not.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's not a unpopular opinion, because I mean, we've seen post Achilles tears and how hard it is to come back from. I hope he does. You know, I'm a person of the belief that I wanted him to play, you know, this summer when the season started back, because I would be way more intrigued to watch a backcourt of John Wall and Bradley Beal go up against Milwaukee in the first round than Orlando, you know, with Jonathan Isaac and Nikola Vucevic. I think Washington, fully healthy, would, you know, maybe take one game and maybe give them a competitive series. But I think, you know, they do a better job than Orlando would.
I absolutely agree. We're going to leave with the last one on our list here. This one kind of caught me by surprise. But Terry Rozier to Minnesota.
Okay.
And in this trade, it would be Terry Rozier going to Minnesota in exchange for James Johnson and Jarrett Culver. What say you?
I like Jarrett Culver, and I know, you know, our buddy Tobias loves Jarrett Culver because he's a Texas Tech alum. But, you know, I think if Charlotte were to pull that off, because they signed Terry Rozier and then realized that we have Devontae Graham, who's kind of playing better than him with making less money as well. So if I can get a wing and Jarrett Culver, I think that would be a win. James Johnson would just be a throw in, obviously. But, and then Terry on Minnesota, would he be a backup to D'Angelo Russell? You would assume so. So he would kind of assume that same role that he had in Boston. I'm not sure how thrilled he would be about that, especially with the culture they have in Minnesota, which is none. So I'm not sure how that would pan out. But if I was Charlotte, I would, you know, be content with getting a lottery pick last year.
So my thought about like Rozier going to Minnesota, and like you said, how would he like adjust or deal with that, given, you know, last season he had a whole lot of issues with Kyrie, was back fully healthy in Boston. It was Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, himself, and it was just Marcus Smart. It was just a big log jam in that Boston backcourt, right? I think he'll be less moody and less problematic, because now at this point, Terry Rozier's got his money.
True.
You know, so now, you know, a lot of people are like, man, shoot, now that I done got paid, I don't care what happens. I done got my bread. I know this money coming on the 1st and the 15th. I do whatever. Right. So, and I think, you know, he's shooting 40% from the three-point line. You know, 45% on catch and shoot threes. So he's going to really help them, you know, in spots offensively. This isn't a guy you want to be, like, creating all of your shots for you, because he's just not that advanced at that stage of his career yet. But I also think on the defensive end, he helps, because Russell and Towns are not good defenders.
Right. I totally agree.
So, you know, he's one of those guys that can cover some things up for you, especially if they want to go really, really small. He can cover some spots up for you. He's not an eraser. I'm not saying he's like an elite defender or anything of the sort. But Rozier is one of those, you know, one of those dogs you want on your roster. You know what I mean? Like one of those guys, like, he won't shy away from a fight. Like, that's a guy you want to have, if that makes sense.
Right.
But
I get you. I agree with you.
But that is the end of our list. And we are actually out of time here on the Game Plan Podcast. Kenny Miller, my man, I appreciate you for hanging out with me yet again this week.
I appreciate you for having me again.
Man, I just realized we've been doing this show for doggone just about 2 years, man, and it hadn't gotten old yet.
Yes, sir. We have. It's been a pleasure doing it, too.
Man, like I told everybody, like, we almost need to put together a best of blooper reel, because I know we have just moments of just cracking up laughing. We've got hundreds of them at this point.
Yeah, just going through all the old footage, man. I know it's some funny stuff in there.
Where can they find you on your social media platforms, dog?
You can find me on Twitter at Coach Ken, underscore TNBA. Again, Coach Ken underscore T as in Texas, N as in New Jersey, B as in Brooklyn, A as in Alaska.
We can roll with that. We can definitely roll with that. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter, Alex Goodwin TSM. Follow the show on Twitter, Game Plan TSM. That's T as in Tanisha, S as in Sandra, M as in Monica. For everybody, we are out of time here on the Game Plan Podcast. Wherever you're listening, however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. This has been the Game Plan Podcast. For Kennedy Miller, Alex Goodwin is my name. We will see you next time.